We would like to thank LSR for sponsoring the Let's Be Frank video podcast. LSR produces Southern Cane Pure Cane Sugar, which is only grown, refined, and packaged in Louisiana. Southern Cane is available in your local Associated Grocers and Rouse's supermarkets. We are kicking off Season 3, Episode 1 on the Let's Be Frank video podcast. I am your host, Jason Dewey, and I'll be joined by Hall of Fame head coach Frank Monaco. We got a great show for everybody tonight. We're going to have some prep talk and preview some Week 1 LHSAA action. We'll talk LSU, Tulane, and Saints football. We're also going to have special guest Hall of Fame head coach Lewis Cook, head coach of Notre Dame. On the Let's Be Frank section, Coach is going to discuss the 12-team college football playoff, and we'll be introducing our newest segment at the water cooler. So, Coach, another season. Congratulations again this summer on officially being introduced into the Hall of Fame. I saw you got a few strikes. Did you get a turkey maybe out there bowling at the wonderful event they had?
Yeah, I threw a few gutter balls also. I want you to know that. You know, I wish they had those bumper plates in there, whatever they call those things. Well, first of all, welcome everybody to 2024, our third year of the Let's Be Frank podcast. And thanks for tuning into us and listening to us. And hopefully we can gather some information and give you something that you never heard before. But before we begin, a special tribute to a couple of people that we've lost during the year. And one is my good friend and head coach for Buddy Tevens. That passed away during our tenure, during our time off here from the show. Buddy he retained me at Tulane. I worked with him for 6 years. I was his offensive coordinator for a couple years also there. And, you know, he had a tragic accident and they amputated his leg. And then years later, an infection set in, infection set in, and it took his life. And the Manning camp will never be the same. It took actually three people to actually replace him. But the great tribute to him, you see BT on helmets, you see BT on all the hats, and Manny Camp will definitely miss him. Just an avid exercise guy, and our condolences go out to his family, especially Kirsten and his wife. Also, we just recently lost one of our favorite sportscasters, a guy who started Friday Night Football and really elevated the high school game and the viewership of high school in Louisiana, especially in New Orleans area, and that was Ed Daniels. Condolences to his wife, Robin. Ed was a personal friend of mine. You know, he always jabbed me as being a big sandbagger. He mentioned several times some of my comments about, you know, that we don't know if we'll be able to break the huddle this year, or the cheerleaders on another team ran 4-4. Even the tuba player can play, you know, stuff like that. He always paraphrased some of my quotes. But we became very close, and he actually brought me a cake on my birthday one time, which was a surprise. So we will miss him, and I think he left a legacy here in Louisiana. And as you said, Jason, special thanks to all of you that made the trip up to Natchez this summer. I know it's a long way to go in a hot summer. Special thanks to Tulane and SEC Quarterback Club for sending a sponsorship, and all my previous coaches and friends that made the trip, especially my family, that made the trip there. It was a very, very special time for me. It was a 4-day event, and I mean, learned a lot up there, and we had a great time not only with the bowling, meeting all the inductees, and it was really a great experience for anybody, and I felt honored by the whole thing. Didn't feel worthy at any time that I've blown there with some of these people, but it was thanks to them anyway. They lowered their standards to let me in there. So, but thanks to all of you that did show up and the friends and the coaches, assistant coaches of my past that did show up on my behalf. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, Coach, and, you know, we've said so many times congratulations on making the Hall of Fame. And, again, we're going to be joined by Lewis Cook later, who's also in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, sitting on side of me will be two Hall of Fame coaches. And I've been told I'm a Hall of Fame talker. So I don't think that's quite in that same billing. But, you know, I'll try to make my presence felt in that sense. But we're going to go ahead and move on to prep talk, as there's so much to discuss with the coming season. But let's go ahead and take a look at the recaps of some jamborees, Coach. Just touch on a few things that you noticed, a few games that stood out. What stood out to you about some of these jamboree matchups that we got to see?
Yeah, that even divulged in the final score, but Destry and Lutcher was a battle. That game ended 6-3, Destry and winning, but Lutcher gave them all they had, and Destry had several committed athletes and 4 or 5-star guys. So tribute to Lutcher for keeping that game close, even though it's only it's 18 minutes shorter than a regular game, and you know, 2 15-minute halves. Rumble and St. Paul had a real, real close game, 17-10. St. Paul quarterback is really, really good, but so is Rumble's quarterback. So two good quarterbacks went at it there. St. Charles Catholic and East St. John. St. Charles Catholic got the better end of it with the benefit of a couple turnovers and real, real good special team play right there at St. Charles. St. Augen Shaw. St. Augen showing that they'll be a formidable football team this year because they defeated Shaw and the Jamboree. It looked like they had an easy time of it. Jesuit defeated North Shore. And, you know, so the Catholic League looks like they're in pretty good shape. And Brother Morton also defeated John Errett. So the Catholic League is its normal position as being one of the best leagues in the state, if not the best, especially now. Newman De La Salle had a 10-10 battle. So that was quite a ball game in itself. Went back and forth. I think Newman missed a field goal at the end where they could have won it. Riverside winning over Bogalusa big. That was a Thursday night game. But so that's just a quick recap of some of the ball games in our area.
Thanks, Coach, and can't wait to break down some of these games. Coach, when you look at the summer leading into a season, you know, how much of a mindset shift is it for players between that Jamboree and week one? You know, the Jamboree is, of course, that dress rehearsal, but there's nothing like being under the Friday night lights when it does matter and it is to your record and there are implications of state titles, playoffs on the line.
You know, I've never disliked Jamborees, but in all fairness to a Jamboree, it gets some of the kinks out. Something like the headsets. You never know if they're going to be good. Sometimes they get new headsets. Sometimes it's a different setup. Maybe you have a different coordinator. Where do you want to put him, upstairs or downstairs? The communication on the sideline to get my special teams ready. Maybe I had 10 men on the field. So maybe this is a way to correct them. So maybe there is an advantage of having the Jamboree so you can get some of these kinks out. But in a short game, you know, in a 15-minute game, sometimes you get a team that just controls the ball. They can eat up that whole clock and might give you maybe two possessions or maybe one possession per half. So, but the evaluation part, you can see if your kids can line up right. That's also important. And there's a lot to correct in the Jamboree. It doesn't really indicate kind of season you're going to have, but you just hope and pray that you come out of it unscathed and without injury.
Thanks, Coach. And let's go ahead and dig into some of these matchups that we're going to discuss. A lot of games that are featured on VSN we're going to discuss tonight, leading off with St. Charles Catholic taking on Newman. The Comets have won three straight. You know, Coach Stewart has got to be feeling that with his ball club. Again, love the challenge of them stepping up and playing this game. A ton of talent on the offensive side for Newman with Eli Friend, who's a commitment to Princeton. You also have running back Jake Randall. And of course, you have Bo Bortle on that big tackle for Newman that's committed to LSU. But the Comets front seven defense is always very notably tough. Coach Stein has always had his team ready to play, led by Shane Zimmerman up front, 3-year starter. What do you expect to see in this matchup?
I really see that. Well, playing over there at Newman's a different story. But St. Charles, you know, they know how to win. They'll play sound defense. They'll be real, real good on special team. Their offense will be very opportunistic, and they won't turn over the ball. It's a good game. I'm pleased that Coach Stewart decided to play St. Charles because even though they're not in the same district anymore and they're not even in the same classification anymore, that's a great to me, it's a great matchup, great game that needs to be played. It kind of gives you a pretty good barometer where you are, especially, you know, because you won't have to play St. Charles in the playoffs just in case they do make it, and they will. They're both a well coached, and it'll be a good game. And I really think that you know, don't discount St. Charles though, because they still have some athleticism on that team, and they'll be physically ready to play. So it should be fun. And Coach, I know Coach Stewart's been looking forward to this game for a long time also.
Comets losing a lot of offensive production, 83% to be exact. So it'll be interesting to see how they try to move the ball offensively with some new pieces there. Moving on to our next game that will also be featured on VSN, Catholic of Baton Rouge taking on Destrehan. Coach, this is a huge, monstrous matchup. We've discussed how some of these Destrehan early season games maybe haven't moved the bar too much. How can you not be excited for this one? We know what Catholic can do. Big, physical, talented ball club. Destrehan has commitments all over the field. Jabari Mack, Phillip Wright, and quarterback prospect Jackson Fields going up against this star-studded secondary of the Catholic Bears with Jacob Bradford, Houston commit, and Blaine Bradford, LSU, and Bama offers in that secondary for Catholic. Going to be interesting to see those wide receivers taking on that secondary of Catholic.
Well, I think that Destrehan is, you know, they're a big play football team. So Catholic High coming in, you're going to have to control the ball, keep them desperate, hit them the big plays of the great receivers, electric quarterback that they have. But, you know, Catholic's been there. I mean, they defend the state champion. They've been there. They have a huge program. What I mean by that number. So you can't even get caught up in how many seniors they graduate because there's another group ready to play, an experienced group at that. So, but it's to be a good, good test for Destrehan. And it's one of those, you know, Jason, I've always said this, professors, that who's the real champion out there? Destrehan would be good in the public ranks. They will be probably in the Superdome again. But Catholic High is probably going to end up on the other side also. But, you know, I hope we ever get back to that situation where you see who the real champion is.
Coach, it's like a week one matchup in the college football. I love it. Non-select versus select. Both teams that are constantly in that hunt at the end. I think it's a fantastic matchup, and what a way to kick off the season for both of these teams. As we turn the page, we have Lafayette Christian taking on Rummel. Two teams that were young last year. We know the athleticism that Lafayette Christian has. They do lose an incredible quarterback in Juwan Johnson, who was all-world ball player. Rummel had a ton of season-ending injuries, really had to build up that youth. I'm excited to see these two teams that are returning a lot of players and see what they put on the field and how things play out.
Yeah, just remember, Lafayette Christian had the game won in the Superdome, and they couldn't hold on to the lead at the end, but they had the game won by a couple of scores late in the ball game. And Rummel was in the semifinal game against Catholic. Actually had Catholic on the ropes until one play, a controversial play, kind of turned the battle of that, and they got a lot of that team returning. So it's going to be an interesting matchup there, and they play it at Zephyr Field. They'll be part of a doubleheader with the other one, Jason, because John Curtis is playing a team from South Carolina. Reborn Gap, Nakuchi, or something like that. They're going to play the first part of that at the Shrine on the airline. So those two games will actually be, I think, the highlights of the New Orleans area.
Coach, I'm glad I'm not the only one that's struggling to say that school's name. We'll talk about them in a moment. But I'm really excited to see this matchup between Rummel and Lafayette Christian. Rummel returned 7 players with experience on defense. A big matchup is going to be big defensive end Greg Jones taking on the 6'7", 305-pound defensive tackle, a Lafayette Christian, Caleb Campbell. And can't wait to see that game play out on the field. As we move on to the next matchup, I'm going to struggle to say it too. Reborn Gap, Nakuchi taking on John Curtis. Coach, I'm going to have to go with Eagles. This Eagles ball club comes in ranked 73rd nationally according to Maps Preps. We know that Curtis is not new to playing this type of ball club. They run a spread offense. They have a really tall, lanky quarterback, Gavin Owens, who likes to sling the ball around. But, Coach, what I'm going to tell you is, we've seen these types of teams play John Curtis. Can you out-physical the Patriots? I don't care how many players they've lost. I'm very interested to see these linebackers, these very experienced linebackers that combined for over 200 tackles last year, taking on this offense of the Eagles.
Well, what happens is people, when you don't play John Curtis and you don't know what they expect, well, it's hard to realize the tempo of the game. When they run that veer at you and you don't know that hard dive, if you don't stop the hard dive, you're going for a long night. Then if you do, they will go to the outside veer. And they pitch the ball rarely, but when they do, it's normally very, very effective. But that offensive line comes off the ball, and they're poetic when they do it. They actually coming off on the count. The mesh takes place in the line of scrimmage. So until you play them and actually play against a real, real good special team, you really don't know what you're getting into. So a lot of people are surprised by the tempo of that game and how physical they will be in the trenches. They've won a lot of ball games by just being physical, and their defense is never out of position.
Coach, you've had experience coaching against John Curtis. How different is it to go from spread to taking on this veer option team? Again, Coach, these players have been doing it since – 4th, 5th, 6th grade. They've run through this program and they know their assignments. They're very fundamentally sound. How much of a challenge is that to replicate with your ones or against even the scout team when practicing best on best leading up to that game?
Well, you try to, but you know, you actually start practicing with a sock because all of a sudden you can't, you know, you have to be careful with it. You have to read your keys, and it's hard to defend. And what people don't realize is how physical of offense it is, but you know, you have somebody to take the dive, the quarterback, and the pitch. You have to really, really be a disciplined football team. If you're a team that just wants to play gap cancellation and run around, you're going to get busted with a big play. And all of a sudden you look up because all it takes one guy to miss his assignment and there's someone who scored it for a touchdown. So, and you have to work on this. It takes more than 3 days of practice. So when you play John Curtis, hopefully you better build up some type of practice time prior to that to stop a triple option team. If you haven't and you try to get that in 3 days and coach it up, you're going to get killed.
Next, Coach, in another big matchup, we have a River Parish showdown between St. James as they take on East St. John in a game of Wildcats squared. And this should be an interesting matchup, Coach. You know, Coach Davis at St. James, his ball club didn't end the season quite the way they wanted to. They thought they had a state title, and the game kind of got away from them at the end. But they're still a very talented ball club. They lose a great quarterback in Braden Williams, who's been playing there for quite some time. They have a really big target in Jacaez Villanueva, a very talented receiver, but they've got to find a way to get that football out. A young man on East St. John, Jerry Phillips, I feel like I've been seeing this young man's name forever at East St. John. He's going to bring the pressure. He's a great pass rusher. They've got to find a way to get those quick passes out to the outside with a new quarterback and maybe establish a ground game to kind of get him comfortable.
Well, right, Jason, if East St. John didn't correct their special teams, it won't matter. Their special teams didn't help them last week. They had a block punt. They had a muff punt and a block punt and a couple shanks on kickoff. So they need to correct their special teams. And because, you know, rather than play on short field and giving them an advantage there, they have a big quarterback that can really throw the ball but they like to throw the ball, stretch the field vertically. But St. James, they have the speed to contend with that. So look for St. James to be really, really jacked up for this game. This is always a big game for them. And, you know, but Coach Brown is, you know, his team has always kind of started slow. But by the middle of the season, they really get going again. So you never know how this is going to turn out.
Coach, I need you to sprinkle some of your wisdom on me because I can't remember quite the numbers. I know you do. What's the percentage of a team winning a football game if they block a punt or a field goal, or I can't remember if it's return it for a touchdown. I know you have the number. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
80% of the team, if you get a blocked punt, you're going to lose 80% of the ball game that you play in. And that happened to him. And that wasn't the only thing. You know, again, it's a jamboree. There wasn't much you can actually decipher from that. But on the flip side of it, I think that it taught Coach Brown, hey, this is the things I need to work on this week is get it corrected. And if you don't get a correction, it'll be a long year.
Thanks, Coach. And let's go ahead and take a look at our next matchup. We have Edna Carr taking on Archbishop Shaw. Really exciting matchup. Carr lost late in the playoffs to Acadiana. You know, they weren't thrilled about the way their season ended. Shaw came up very right on the short as well. They averaged 35 points offensively a game last year. A very high-powered, explosive offense for the Eagles. Mason Wilson, Jasper Parker, Jacob Washington, so many athletes and weapons at quarterback, running back, wide receiver. They can pretty much do whatever they want. But can you do it against the speed and athleticism of a defense like Edna Carr when you've got two really big bodies up the middle, Richard Anderson, LSU commit, and Corey Adams, an Ole Miss commit? They're going to have to find a way to get that ball out quick because these big defensive linemen are going to come at them.
That's an awesome matchup right there for Shaw. Shaw really beefed up their schedule this year because they felt like they needed to because their district it hadn't been real competitive. So this is a real big opener for them. Carr just loaded. I mean, they're the who's who of high school athletes over there on both sides of the ball. And, I mean, there's not a weakness that they have on the team. Coach Brown does a great job in getting his kids prepared. They're well organized. And so Coach Tierney, I mean, one of the best coaches in the state, but Coach Tierney got his hands full. That's a heck of an opener for him. He's got some good athletes. He's got a couple of kids that transferred in that are real good athletes that are Michigan committees. But on the flip side of it, I don't know if it's going to be a tough game for Shaw. Look for Carr to probably win the game, but you just hope that you come out of that game without any injuries.
Again, keep your eye on Wilson, over 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns for the Shaw offense last year. But as you mentioned, Carr's a very scary team. First time these teams have played since 2012, so keep your eye out on that one. In our next matchup, we have Holy Cross taking on E.D. White. Coach, this is another Veer-type offense in Edie White. We know that they've historically had success in the playoffs, have been very good recently. They're known as a big physical team. Holy Cross plays in the Catholic League. They're very used to that spread it out, high-paced, fast-paced offenses, speed everywhere. We know Holy Cross is going to be replacing some Division I talent at wide receiver, but they're still loaded. They still have a few guys that they return this year, and they're going to be able to make some plays for them, including a loaded backfield. But we're going to expect to see Edie White continue to try to ground out the football with Ben Rodrigue, which was an all-district running back. And we know that they're going to be big and physical, but can they keep up with the speed and athleticism of this Holy Cross defense? In DiGiulermo, who's an all-state wrestler and has been a phenomenal athlete for this defense for Holy Cross.
Well, Holy Cross also has a huge tight end that's a real, real playmaker, and they'll try to get the ball to him. They have two wide receivers on the outside that are very, very pretty to look at. I saw them in 7-on-7 this summer. They throw the ball around pretty good, and they had a great season last year, so they're trying to build off of that. They had a lot of momentum until late in the year. They lost a couple ball games, but they were undefeated for most of the season there. But Edie White plays real, real stout defense. I mean, they'll bend, but they won't break. And I mean, a very, very physical football team. And they'll shrink the game because they can run it. They can move the chains on you. They'll shrink the game. They're gonna try to limit your possessions, especially if you're a spread team. But Holy Cross is going to have the edge there with speed, but as you said before. But remember, Edie White will have power, and they'll slow the game down.
And as you mentioned, Coach, keep your eye out on tight end Derek Johnson and Finn Martin. Both of these guys, very talented athletes that kind of got overshadowed by the amount of athleticism on this Holy Cross team. But they have every ounce of athleticism to be these big-time playmakers that we saw on the field last year at the wideout position. As we move on, we're going to see St. Aug take on McDonough 35. Coach, St. Aug, as you mentioned, looked very good in their jamboree. They have a ton of talent. Coach, this is arguably the scariest defense in the state. Jakeem Stewart is a junior. He is the number one player in the country and absolutely lives up to the billing. He has the ability to completely change the complexity of an offensive line scheme. They're going to have to double team, and that's going to be the big matchup. Can this offensive line of McDonough 35 distribute the football when you have Jakeem Stewart and Warren Roberts, who's another great playmaker on a defensive line? Can they get the ball to their playmakers when you have that pressure on you?
Yeah, it's a really good ball game. I tell you, even a bigger competition will be their bands, the St. Aug band against the McDonough 35 band. I mean, there'll be a lot of dancing and boogieing on that halftime show. And I mean, they'll pack the place. It's a Saturday night game. St. Aug Coach Valdez has come in, is new, bringing a lot of organization, bringing a new brand of football into St. Aug. He'll organize them. He's going to be our guest speaker next week on our show. But you know, McDonough 35 will play hard. They'll play hard, but do they have enough talent to keep pace with St. Aug? Because St. Aug will be a team at the end. Big defensive lineman you just mentioned. He's one of the best I've ever seen. And I mean, he's gigantic. He's a big kid. He's a kid actually local. He's tall, and he plays with a lot of intention with great leverage.
Yeah, the listing I see is 6'6", 275. I think that's an old listing. I've also seen 6'7", 300 pounds. And this young man, I actually taught this young man, Jakeem Stewart, way back when. I had to look up at him when he was in the eighth grade as he was going up against college prospects walking my halls. He is a wonderful young man, great head on his shoulders. And I'm very proud to see how great he is doing and the success that he's had along his journey.
It's quite a future.
Absolutely. And as we move on, we see Brother Martin taking on East Ascension. Coach, East Ascension, another team, they're on a single wing system, which is kind of odd to see at a 5A program like East Ascension with the kind of athletes we normally see there. But they're under new leadership as well, under Coach Brock Mathern. But we know opposite end, Coach Bonice has been at Brother Martin for quite some time. We know we expect to see hard-hitting defense, very fundamentally sound football. But I'm interested to see if East Ascension can move past the struggles they've had in recent history and rebrand themselves and try to kick the door open under this new tenure with this big Week 1 matchup.
Coach Mathern, who really haven't ready to play, but right now he needs a quarterback. He's got a young quarterback at that position, and You know, they've always had some size, but, you know, going against a program like Brother Morton, Coach Bo Nice, they've all be well coached. They will never be out of step. They won't be out of position. You know, to have that in your first ball game of the year is a learning experience for you. And, you know, Coach coming over, he was a great quarterback himself when he played as a player at Belle Chasse. And so he's going to get that program going. But unfortunately, he's going to really, really actually dipping in the deep waters here when he goes against Brother Martin, especially for your first ball game of your coaching career at a new school.
Yeah, East Ascension can't let Seth Dazet get comfortable, experienced quarterback. Brother Martin with a younger offensive line. East Ascension is going to have to find a way to apply pressure if they want to continue to be in that ball game. And as we move on, another River Parish program we're going to talk about as Slidell takes on Lutcher. Coach Slidell, another program with a new coach with Damon Page. A lot of two-way players, which kind of raises a bit of a concern for their ball club. Again, still talented, but Lutcher returns 10 offensive starters, and we know the way that they're able to move the football over there and the talent that they have. What do you expect to see in this game?
Well, Slidell is going to try to get back in the winning ways, and they're a 5A school. You know, they're a big school, and having the transition like that, a new coach is always a challenge. You don't know exactly what to expect, and because the philosophy is different, and you never know exactly what's going to take place in that first ball game, how the kids are going to react under pressure. Lutcher comes there with an experienced coach. Coach Jenkins has been around a long time. He's got a lot of skins on the wall himself. His son is the quarterback. That's got to be exciting for him. You know, in some respect, I hope it's exciting for his son, you know, and he's got one of the best defensive players, I think, in the state. He's a Houston commit, a defensive end. He's got a nose guard that's really, really hard to block. So it's going to be a really interesting game to see how Lutcher does. And I look for Lutcher to be one of the teams to contend with in their classification when the smoke settles at the end of the year.
Coach, if it's any consolation for his son, he's going to have some help. Four returning offensive linemen coming back, and that's a solid unit. Plus, UL commit in the backfield. Trenton Chansey will be helping him alleviate some pressure as well. And on to our last matchup that we'll discuss. We have Dallas Jesuit taking on Jesuit of New Orleans. I'll go ahead and keep it simple and call one the Rangers and one the Blue Jays to make life a little bit easier. The last time these two teams met was in the year 2000, and it was a one-point win for the Blue Jays. Coach, the Rangers took a loss last week. What's interesting is they kind of run a lot of spread. We're going to see them kind of come out with a bit of a loaded backfield. Sometimes they'll go two backs and try to run some option game, try to get their speed. But we know Jesuit's going to be fundamentally sound defensively. So you can run these types of plays, but if you're not protecting up front and you're not getting the ball out quick, Jesuit will catch you. And that's what I think is going to be the great matchup, is this the sound New Orleans Jesuit defense taking on this this smaller kind of undersized team from what I've seen on film, ball club out of Dallas.
Well, you know, it's a kind of the Archdiocese kind of likes to see these two teams match up with one another, kind of compare notes, sort of for bragging rights among the Jesuits themselves, the brothers and the priests there. But, you know, I think the Jesuits program of being a big program, a school with 1,400 kids compared to a smaller Jesuit team, that they don't play in the public school division over there. They play in the private school division, which is very rare in Texas. They don't have many private schools in all of Texas, because most of them are publicly financed. So I look for the Jesuit of New Orleans to be okay with this. It's a good matchup. It's a good opening ball game. I think it's good brotherhood for both schools in terms of that. So that's kind of why they made the game. But it's always interesting to see. And you want to get off to be 1-0 no matter who you're playing, to be honest with you. And but this is good schedule on their part. And I think everybody's glad to see this. And two Catholic schools playing one another. Jason, one team I didn't talk about earlier to you, but Riverside takes on a 5A opponent in Terrebonne. So that should be interesting. But Riverside got two quality players over there, and with a couple of transfers, they're really going to make them very special this year.
Yes. Riverside, for being a 1A school, is very difficult to remain deep at a position. So it'll see how they face off against that 5A squad of Terrebonne, who also has a new coach, is my understanding, and they're trying to change things up. But we know Coach Lee Roussel. You know him personally, as he was on your staff. He'll have his boys ready to play, and that should be a fascinating matchup as well. But, Coach, before we move on to the next segment, We've seen a few of these out-of-state matchups. Why would a team schedule these out-of-state games, and why is it so difficult to go on the road out-of-state to play a team from your experience?
But the first thing, to tell you why, they can't find anybody else that will play them. What happens when you go to schedule, every year, as you know, it's a two-year contract. Every 2 years, you have to get a new schedule. And a lot of teams will not want to play you again for various reasons. And sometimes, what normally I've found, the weaker teams normally like to schedule earlier. If they're not in the playoffs, they're on the phone early, and they're scheduling other people they feel that they can compete with. Well, all of a sudden, if you notice that some of the better schools are really having to reach out and playing some people, you know, and that's not Jesuit's case here. I think that this is another, it's not an archdiocese school, but it's not a Catholic school. So that was a natural matchup. But you look at, here's John Curtis playing an out-of-state school. And you look at, here's Romo playing Lafayette Christian, the first game of the year, the defending state champion for been in Superdome many years. Then they follow that up with playing University High. So, I mean, a lot of because nobody else was answering that phone. You know what I mean? And so it becomes for that. But, you know, some people like to play good people early. And because exactly you get the chance to evaluate you. Are we ready for the big time or not? And because it magnifies your mistakes. You can make that little mistake when you're playing a weaker opponent and get away with it. But if you're playing against a real good opponent, it really magnifies the mistakes. And you see that fastball rather than the changeup.
Coach, that might have accidentally been the best segue as we move on to our next segment. As we're going to go ahead and talk some college football with some local programs. Speaking of these early tests, Coach, USC defeats LSU 27-20 in their matchup. Five straight years we sit here and talk about a week one loss from LSU. And again, this isn't ending, Coach, in terms of the games that they're playing. They're going to be playing Clemson on the road next year, and they're going to be playing them at home the following year for game one. So at what point do you have to sit back, Coach, and say, maybe we need to get a tune-up game to get things evaluated, because clearly this isn't working. And to be fair, Coach, LSU, I thought they played well in many aspects. I thought their defense looked significantly better. I thought Coach Baker did a good job of realizing the strength of his team and saying, look, we're just going to blitz. We're going to blitz. And did it pay off every time? No. But again, I think Nussmeier did a great job. Play calling was poor. Preparation was poor. Discipline was poor. But, you know, you're finding that out early. At what point do you say, let's stop finding that out early? Let's have at least wait a week to kind of see where we sit.
Well, you know, give them credit for saying, hey, a lot of people are playing these weak sisters and they're running up their score and stuff like that. That's why the 12-team playoff, which we'll talk about later, really, really is intriguing and something that needs to be done a long time ago. But, you know, just my takeaway from the LSU game. Number one, why you don't take the field goal on fourth and goal from the four? If it's fourth and goal from the one, I can understand it. But you open the drive is perfection. You go down the field, man, reward your kids with some points right there. And all of a sudden you put some doubt in USC's mind. I didn't understand that. I realized they had some costly penalties. But there are some other things that I thought Nussmeier played extremely, extremely well. LSU is – they don't have any backs that you really want to write home about. I think their backs are very, very average. We talked about that. What happened to Perkins? He was invisible. I mean, they keep the guy. They showed him where he actually turned down a tackle, I don't know how many tackles he made. I didn't hear his name called. Defensive linemen were not there. I agree with you. I really think that the defensive coordinator did an excellent job realizing what he's playing with. I think he did a nice job. I didn't, you know, but I do think I'd like to see Nussmeier. He has to come to the point where he's going to have to scramble a little bit every now and then. I don't think he had one rushing yard. There's come to time, but I think he's a great throw. He's a great kid. He was in a Manning camp, and I love him to death, you know. But the second half, I agree with you there. Their play selection in the second half, I mean, they didn't open up the playbook at all in the second half. They were trying to run the ball. And again, with average backs, and it wasn't the backs' fault. I mean, the line was there. But really what got to me, the cover two technique, when they completed a long pass on the sideline, when the kid gets hit with a helmet-helmet contact, which I don't think was helmet-helmet contact, that's what the safety on the hash is supposed to do. But the cornerback on that side, football 101 when you're playing defense, you teach the cornerback, he has to funnel that the receiver. If he doesn't get a number two to direct to the outside, you sync with that guy. He should have been running with that guy that closed on an angle. Everybody knows cover two, cover four, where the weaknesses are. And that cornerback just sat there. There was no threat to the flat. Division one cornerback who's a four-year player. I mean, when that happened, I said, my goodness, every high school defensive back coach is saying, what is he doing? You know, and stuff like that. So you can't put that on anyone but the players themselves. But they did play well enough to win the game. I know Coach Kelly, I think he's a heck of a coach. I love to hear him talk. But the bottom line, I mean, they let that one get away from them. There's some things that they can correct. But I do think that they're going to be fine. But that the defense is still a concern for what I saw.
Coach, one big issue I had before we move on, running – they're running into a loaded box every time. You know, I think when one thing that I've learned over the years, and I've had discussions with some people who've played the game at the college level and beyond, and said, you know, personnel dictates what the defense is going to do, right? So when you're running out there in 12 personnel with two tight ends, and the defense is going to load the box with eight, you're signaling to them you're going to run the football. And then you're not going to try to push the ball to the outside. You're going to continue beating your head against the wall and not mix things up. Eight-man box, not trying to pass the ball, coming out in the second half and just consistently running the football. I thought it was baffling. Also, to your point, Coach, second year in a row, we see them march down the field on the first drive and not go and go forward on fourth down and not convert. And it made a difference in the tempo and the way that game played out. Yeah. They play Nichols, Coach, in two sentences. What do you think LSU needs? What would you like to see LSU do to improve from week one to week two with playing, you know, a local school in Nichols State?
Well, Nichols State will be ready for them. And Nichols State's a good football team. They've been picked to win their conference. Their center is a kid that Evan Roussel is a kid that starts for him. He's their fourth-year starter for Nichols State. I know he's looking forward to it. But they'll be excited to play in Tiger Stadium. And don't just think this is a gimme with this automatic 40 points, 50 points and playing the second team in the second quarter. That's not going to happen. I don't think LSU has turned the corner there yet. I think Coach Kelly will. He's having an excellent recruiting year. I think he will. But right now, this football team has some weaknesses. And I think if you watch it close enough, you can exploit those. And the defensive line is still not there. They got adequate linebackers. And a couple of the guys in the secondary still, you know, have to learn a little bit. But I do think the receivers are good. And like I said before, I think they're very average in the backfield. And they're trying to force a square peg in a round hole with that situation. But I do like some of the scheme that they use. But again, when Nussmeier hands the ball off and the edge on the backside of it, he's responsible for that guy. So if he sees that guy's going to rob the ball carry, he's got to be able to pull that. And remember, they came from a program last year. Jalen Daniels had one play, either zone and zone read only. That was the one play they had in the running game. So I think that there's going to be a little bit more emphasis on that, and I can see that. But I really like Nussmeier in the pocket. I think he's got great eyes, and he's got an adequate arm, and he's not afraid. And that's what I really like about him. He's courageous.
All right, Coach, let's go ahead and take a look at our next team, which is going to be the Tulane Green Wave. They defeated Southeastern 52-0 in their home opener, which is a big win. What positives did you see, and what can help them moving forward as they take on a formidable opponent coming up in Kansas State that is coming to – I love that, by the way, that Kansas State is coming to New Orleans to play Tulane in that game.
Well, number one, that game could have been real close. Southeastern drove the ball down. It was 14-7 at half. It could have been 14-7 at halftime. Southeastern had a guy wide open in the end zone on a fade route. He ended throws in. The guy picks it, goes 100 yards, and turns the game around from 21-7. Tulane gets the opening possession of the second half. They went down to score. That game could have easily gone the other way. Southeastern, first possession, goes down inside the 25-yard line, and they fumbled the ball to Tulane. So that could have been a little bit closer. So it's hard to read. Is Tulane that good or Southeastern not very that weak? I think it's a little bit of both. And I know that Coach Summerall was not really pleased with a couple motion calls that he had against his offensive lineman. By the way, I think his offensive line is very good, and he's got good backs. I thought the quarterback was more of a runner, but he showed that he can really throw the ball pretty decently. And he's just a redshirt freshman. The special teams, I think, their special team will be good. They got a decent punter and kicker. I didn't mention this about LSU, but You know, LSU's got a punter that can only get the ball 35 yards down the field. I don't get that. I mean, there's got to be some other guys around the state that can put the ball 35 yards, you know, a little bit further Division I football. But Tulane special teams will be good. They had a couple breakdowns on the kickoff team. But this week, they play Kansas State, who's got a quarterback that can really run. So that's going to be a challenge for them to stop them. So Tulane knows, and I think Coach Summerall even said it in the press conference, they really have to correct a lot of things if they expect to be a contender in that conference. So this is a big ball game for them because Kansas State is probably the marquee team on their schedule, you know, compared to the rest of their conference. So this is a big ball game. They're already a ranked team. So if Tulane can get away with this one, no telling what kind of season that they're looking at.
And hopefully they get those kinks worked out. We know they have an explosive offense, not just because of the 52 points they scored, but they brought in a ton of transfers, a ton of athletes on the outside, in the backfield, at quarterback. I'm excited to see this matchup. And again, I'm sure a lot of people will be locked in nationally, which I think is great. I think it's great to get this brand exposure for Tulane, a program that, Coach, it wasn't that long ago, was really having a rough go. But we've seen this incredible turnaround over the past few years, and it's been awesome to see, you know, everybody kind of flocks towards LSU, but it's been great to see people kind of paying attention to this Green Wave Ball Club over the past few years.
They're legitimate. You're right.
So, Coach, let's go ahead and turn our attention to the Saints as they're going to be taking on the Carolina Panthers. Coach, what do you see in this matchup? Coach, it's another year of Saints football. I don't know how many changes that they've really made that are going to make a difference in this year. What are the odds that they surprise us? Because there's only so much dancing around it that we can get, right? There hasn't been enough fundamental changes to this team to get super excited about. It just has to be coaching and mentality in the locker room, right? Like the way that they approach each game. So give me a positive outlook, Coach. As a Saints fan out there, how do we have a positive outlook going into this week and moving forward the rest of the season?
Well, I think it's important. You know, they talk about the coordinator, but, you know, that's really overrated. I mean, because they're the same plays. About when you call it might be different, but they're the same plays. There's a shallow cross, the corner route, the verticals, the play action, stuff like that. And the big thing about the play action and outside zone. Outside zone is an excellent play because you have to stretch accordingly if you're a defensive player. I look for the strength of the team really be the defense. I really like their defense. Of course, they're going against the first ball game, the former Heisman Trophy winner. But and Carolina will play hard. They always do. They're in the conference. But I think, you know, Carr has to be the leader. He has to have a good year. I really like both their backup quarterbacks. I think that they're the future of the Saints. I like them both. But their secondary is going to be their strength. Now, are they a big play team? They have to get the ball to Kamara. He's a guy that he can make plays for you, and I think that's good. They got a little speed. They got a good return. They're really, really good on special teams, and they're one of the best special teams unit in the NFL. So if you play good special teams, and that's what, it goes back to turnovers. It goes back to that. The team that doesn't turn the ball over will normally win, and they got a real, real good field goal kicker. So I look for them. They have a decent start of the season, but unfortunately, their schedule is really tough. And, you know, everybody's looking for them. They won't blow out Carolina, but that first ball game, I mean, the intensity there will be something. But I look for them to get by Carolina. Then after that, it's a crapshoot.
All right, Coach. And that'll do it for our first segment. When we come back, we're going to have special guest Hall of Fame head coach and current head coach of Notre Dame, Lewis Cook. And keep it locked in. We'll be back on the Let's Be Frank video podcast. We would like to thank the Accardo Law Firm for being a supporter of the Let's Be Frank video podcast.
Based out of Gramercy, Louisiana, LSR produces Southern Cane Pure Cane Sugar, which is only grown, refined, and packaged in Louisiana. LSR utilizes the latest innovations in technology, as well as ensuring the growth and stability of Louisiana sugarcane farmers by integrating more than 800 growers in the industry's economic structure. Southern Cane is available in your local Associated Grocers and Rouse's supermarkets.
Since 1972, Riverlands Insurance Services has been dedicated to securing the best insurance products and services available to protect you, your family, your assets, and your business. Our goal has been to establish a strong relationship and partnership between you, the insurance company, and our agency, creating a circle of success that prepares for disasters before they actually happen.
Tonight, our special guest has been coaching high school football in Louisiana for 40 years and has amassed over 400 wins, making him third on the all-time list, and four state titles during his career. He also has a spot in both the Louisiana and LHSAA Hall of Fames. We want to welcome in our special guest, Notre Dame head football coach, Coach Lewis Cook. Coach, thank you so much for joining us. And the game has changed so much schematically over the past 10 years, much less over the past 40 years. What's been the biggest aspect of the game that's been impacted in game planning week to week with the changes that you've seen schematically over these 40 years?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the spread offense. That's probably been the biggest change over in the last 12, 15 years, just spreading everybody out. When I first started coaching, actually, I started in 1974. This is my 40th year as a head coach, 51 years altogether. And, nobody's throwing the ball around. You played one or two little defenses. Everybody was piled in. But now you really have to be able to make some serious adjustments when those teams come out. The good thing for us is we've never been a spread team. We're still under the belief that you got to run the football and stop the run to be a champion. And so it's actually become an advantage in a lot of games for us that we are I formation some or a power running team, because a lot of teams are not seeing it, but maybe once or twice in the season.
Coach, you have 401 wins, and that's a tremendous feat. It's 40th year as head coach, as you mentioned, and 51st year. We had that in common, at least from that standpoint. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame thing and LHSAA and also Louisiana High School Hall of Fame, which is in Natchez, which is a tremendous tribute to you. Coach, also, people don't know that you're one of the original members when we started the Football Coach Association many years ago, back in 1986, and you were very instrumental in getting that going, and your reputation precedes yourself. And you know, a lot of people don't like Frank Monaco, but nobody in the state doesn't like Louis Cook, you know, because he's a tremendous guy. But Coach, you know, what Jason just alluded to about your offensive system, you're one of the few coaches that still plays with a tight end, and you still, whenever anybody plays against you, I know whenever we had to play against you, we had a scheme, you run the same play, but block it like 10 different ways. And you've always had great success doing that. And people don't realize that you get your players up at 6 o'clock every morning during the summertime to work out. But respond to that a little bit, of Coach, of how that work ethic has translated into victory, because you don't sign many college athletes. You just do it with just making kids in position.
Right. Well, I've always felt, Frankie, that, you know, you win your games in January, February, March, April, in your off-season program. And I've been it's always been something that, for whatever the reasons, in brain that we have to train, and especially here at Notre Dame, because as you said, I spent 8 years coaching at Crowley High, four NFL guys, tremendous athletes, a bunch of college football players, guys that went on to play in college. Not the same here, but 6 a.m. workouts. Now it's gone, even the group comes at 5:30. We go 3 days a week, all summer long, and we ask for 16 workouts through the 8 weeks of the summer. Now, we hand them a calendar. We don't tell them what days they have to come, when they have to take their vacation. It's still summertime. And I try to emphasize that to the kids. We want them to have some break. But at the same time, You know, I read an article one time when Muhammad Ali was training for a fight, and he said the 90 days prior to the fight are the most important days to train. Well, 90 days for a football player is June, July, and August before the first game. So that involves your summer. And if you're going to be a football player, then you got to understand that some of it is going to be used up here to train. And that's, you know, that here at Notre Dame, Frankie, that's been our key. I tell everybody, you know, when they ask about the success that we've had and, you know, how that's come about, and it's because of the training. Unfortunately for us, St. Charles trains as hard or more than we do. And we haven't been able to get by for the last several years. But, you know, two times in the semis and once in the quarters. But, you know, I never walk off the field. When I lose to someone that I know is working as hard as we work, it's a lot easier to take than when you lose to somebody that doesn't do anything right, except you're blessed to have an abundance of talented kids that line up and they just throw it around and let talent win. But anyhow, we have been fortunate the kids are willing to work and put in the time and the work to give us a chance.
Coach, you said that a lot, very, 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 very well. In fact, Coach, Artie Hanks, I still stole one of his ice chests and with all his great crawfish that he has over there every year.
Yeah.
And Coach, you know, what do you think? Compare the differences, because you've been both. You know, you were a lot like I was. And, you know, we have a common, I think, you know, legacy in terms of high school and college. Explain the difference of what you thought with the difference in college players and high school players and the whole situation, the systems themselves.
I think back when you and I coached in college, we still had a chance to develop, you know, or share ideas with them that would help them maybe, you know, later on in their life. I think that's changed quite a bit now because of, you know, guys are just transferring around. So you really don't get to develop a program. But I coached a young man, Donnie Wallace, was a quarterback for us at UL. At the time was USL, University of Southwestern Louisiana. He's gone on in the marketing with the PGA Tour. And he made a comment. He said, Coach, you know, you do such a good job of developing these kids and preparing them. He said, you know, college and the pros kind of manage talent. You guys in high school develop talent. And I think that's probably the biggest difference, Frank, that you take them, you know, 15, 14 years old. Orlando Thomas was a kid that played for me, Crowley High. We rejoined each other at UL in Lafayette. Came to Crowley, he was 13 years old in high school. He weighed 98 pounds. He looked like a pencil. And 2 years later, he said, Coach, I'm going to play college football. I kind of just gave him a look like I guess he thought he couldn't do it. And I said, well, are you doing everything it takes to develop? So we started track, not out on the track team. But he got on the track team. Make a long story short, he was drafted 42nd by the Minnesota Vikings out of first AP All-American out of USUL. But grew to be 6'2" and about 215 pounds. And I'm talking about just a hard hit safety. But, you know, the young man developed. Senior year at Crowley, we won the state championship. That kid willed us to a state championship. That was a kid that weighed 98 pounds in the ninth grade. You know, there's a lot of development to do there. And, you know, I tell that story all the time because he was a driven young man that just kept developing.
Coach, you have a longstanding staff that have been with you for many years. So, you know, that says it's a credit to you because you treat your assistants well. You let them coach, but they've been there a long time. You have sons that are coaches. Expound on that just a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that's a blessing, Frank, you know, to where you can hold on to guys and get that consistency. I took the job here going on my 28th year, and our defensive coordinator, Jimmy McCleary, actually came to meet me when he was in college. I was coaching the offense, and sat in my meetings and wanted to learn football. Asked if he could talk to me, what I thought he should do. Became a student coach for me, charted plays for me, film practices. I mean, he did it all. So when he did a student teaching here the first year, so he's in his 27th year here with me. My son Lewis graduated from Notre Dame in 2000. While he was in college, he coached the freshman team for me. Now he's with, so he's in his 24th year and 20th as a full-time coach. So to have those guys, Todd Gray, Gray was our offensive line coach. He was the ring bearer, my wife, when he got married in 73. And just a little tight and came with me when I got to Notre Dame and was with me for 24 years. He's since moved into the all-field, his wife, Allison, running a beautiful company and all field. She's an engineer. And so he's in with her, helping her continue to develop that business. And so I lost him, but those guys got us going. And a guy, Chris Stevens, has been with me going on 10 years here. We've got Jake Mobert and Craig Cormier, who guys that played for us. Jake was on the 09 state championship team. And Trey was a junior that year, so they're back in the program. So, you know, I mean, y'all did the same thing. You had family with you at St. Charles, and you know, that's why those programs have been successful. You were able to have some consistency amongst the guys that are coaching, and it means a lot. You know, I'm thankful they're here. They love being here, and it gives us a chance.
No, Coach, you've been one of the premier coaches ever in high school football in Louisiana, because – last question for you. How do you see the differences now in other sports that have some of the significance of travel ball, the AAU basketball and things of that been affecting, impacting football?
Yeah, you know, I think it's hurting kids more than anything else for them to start specializing at 9, 10 years old, you know, go year round baseball. We're seeing more injuries because of it. AAU basketball, travel softball, club volleyball. You know, Frank, you know, here at Notre Dame, we've been good in volleyball, softball. Several years ago, we won the state championship in volleyball, and we won the state championship in softball. And I had to discontinue girls basketball because I didn't have enough girls. Now, you know, we got some athletes. You're going to win state in those two sports. If I could have taken three off of each of those two sports, those six girls would have won a lot of basketball games for them. But because of the specializing, and the same thing's going to happen, you know, starting to happen in football. Football's tough. You know, I mean, we were just talking about a game on Friday night, maybe raining. I said, well, we don't once chose to coach football outdoors. You got to play in the elements. You know, we could have gone basketball and be in air conditioning all the time. but no, you know, I think it's having a huge impact on the game of football. I'm seeing teams with 25, 30 players, you know, and, you know, we're almost at the point where I'm almost convinced some schools have to drop it. They're just having a hard time keeping it going. And it's a shame, you know, because it's, you know, Frank, I've been fighting, you know, to keep the innocence of high school football. I mean, that's the one year we had a guy, Frank, he had nerve damage to one of his arms that happened in a car accident. So his arm was limp. It was still on his body. He taped it to his chest. He put his shoulder pads over it, and he started for us at defensive end with one arm. I mean, what other chance he'd ever have to do that other than high school ball, you know? And so it teaches. There's so many lessons that you're going to learn them in other sports, but it's not the same as learning on that football field in the heat and getting hit and sweat and your mouth getting dry and you're hurting. But you keep going, and the lesson that we've been able to teach, you know, from that is just a microcosm of some of the days they're going to have during their lifetime. Not going to be easy for them. You know, and the last chance we got to help them is they're on the field. It's not about the wins and losses. Yeah, we won a bunch of games. But, you know, I told my young son, my youngest one, Stu, is coaching at Iowa down the road towards Lake Charles. You know, I said, Stu, he was just getting in coaching. He said, Dad, what should I be concerned with? I said, don't be concerned with the wins and losses. Just ask the kids when they come back, you know, what you did for them. You know, that's what they're going to remember. They're not going to remember how many games you won or they won, or, you know, but it's what did you do for them? And that's, to me, that's still what it's all about. And hopefully we got younger guys coming in that'll do that. I think society's got us where we got to win. I mean, you know, all about the wins and the losses now, and it's trickled down. The colleges are getting killed with it. and it's trickling into high school ball. You know, you can be a good guy, teach them a lot of lessons, but you win three games and they get tired quick. And it's a shame. It really is.
Coach, I'm telling you, and well said. I mean, and nobody knows it better. You can tell why the kids will run through the wall for you. It's about the experience, the journey that you get out of football. And it's not about a trophy, even though everybody goes for that ring. Coach Cook, I know you got a big ball game against Southside this week. It's going to be more than a barometer because that's a big program that's really, really growing. It's an up-and-coming program. But we thank you so much, and good luck this weekend. And we'll be pulling for you. And I'll call Vegas and see if I'll make a little wager on your team, okay?
Thanks, Frank. I really appreciate spending time with you guys and the opportunity for us to talk. And good luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach. Good luck.
We would like to thank Gulf Coast Responders for being a sponsor of the Let's Be Frank video podcast.
Based out of Gramercy, Louisiana, LSR produces Southern cane, pure cane sugar, which is only grown, refined, and packaged in Louisiana. LSR utilizes the latest innovations in technology, as well as ensuring the growth and stability of Louisiana sugarcane farmers by integrating more than 800 growers in the industry's economic structure. Southern Cane is available in your local Associated Grocers and Rouse's supermarkets.
Since 1972, Riverlands Insurance Services has been dedicated to securing the best insurance products and services available to protect you, your family, your assets, and your business. Our goal has been to establish a strong relationship and partnership between you, the insurance company, and our agency, creating a circle of success that prepares for disasters before they actually happen.
We would like to thank Riverlands Insurance for sponsoring the Let's Be Frank video podcast. Welcome back to segment 3 of the Let's Be Frank video podcast. Here's the Let's Be Frank segment. Coach, you're going to go ahead and discuss the college football 12-team playoff system. Do you like it? Do you hate it? Do you love it? Indifferent? Where do you fall on the way it's set up, how it's structured, and what do the fans need to know?
Well, guys, I tell you, I'm excited about it. I think this is something that's long overdue. In the 80s, sat in when I was in college coaching, I was assistant coach, and I was asked to sit in on a meeting for the NCAA. And this came up in the 80s. And I remember two very, very prominent coaches standing up at the time said they didn't want a college playoff system because it put too much pressure on coaches, especially head coaches. And I remember that was voted down at that particular meeting. And ever since that time, in fact, the late Ed Daniels, I remember him writing an article, and he and I kind of discuss this at length about how great a college football system should be, because the other divisions have been doing it for years with 16 teams, and they've been doing it for years, and it's worked out fine. To me, the excitement about the bracket play, whenever you're in bracket, especially in high school, even in high school, people can't wait to see who do you play next, where do they go there. They'll stay up late at night to figure out who's the bracket and power ranking and things of this nature. This would be very, very similar to that. The top four teams would actually have a bye. The top five teams of the Power Five team will automatically go to the playoffs. The others will have an opportunity to play at home. And the bowls are also included in this. That's what I really like. The Sugar Bowl, for instance, will actually have a playoff game of their own. And in addition to the Super Bowl being in New Orleans, so that's going to be exciting for the New Orleans fans in general. But when you look at it, it's what this system does. It rewards a team for playing a tough schedule. So you're not out of the picture if you have one loss. You might not be out of the picture if you have two losses. Look at the SEC. I mean, that's brutal. Look at the Big Ten. I mean, you have brutal schedules there. And that you can easily lose two ball games and cancel out one another that way. So with the power ranking system that they have in place, and it's very, very easy. It's very, very easy for somebody to be eliminated and all the rhetoric. In fact, before the LSU and Southern Cal game, they were still barbing back and forth about who was the real champion way back when those teams were both declared as national champions. So I think that's going to clarify a lot of things. And the best team could be there regardless of how they started. It's the best team at the end by the committee. And listen, you're still going to have some controversy about between 12 and 13 or something like that. I get that. But at least within them, you'll be able to get some of the better teams in there. Alabama a couple years ago deserved to be in it. And it showed that Osmaker even told you that if Alabama was there, it would have been a favorite team. But so this way, all the controversy can be eliminated. But let's settle this thing on the field like we should have done years and years ago. And the money they make is really, really going – I think it's going to supersede the Super Bowl.
Coach, quick question, because it's kind of bothered me about the system, and you have greater insight into this as a coach. One thing that I have concern over with the 12-team playoff is this bye that they have built in. When you have teams playing in a conference championship game, you can have another team sitting on the couch eating Doritos, and they're going to get one less week of wear and tear while the other team is playing on the field. Do you feel like there should be a bye? Are you okay with the system it is? Or as a coach, how would you feel about that if it was in the high school ranks?
It happened. It happened at LSU years ago. If you remember, LSU had to play a conference game. Alabama did not. And Alabama got in and ended up beating LSU for the national championship right there in the Superdome. So that everybody should play. Everybody should play in terms of that. And let's get the best team on the field. Heck with the bye. Let's do. I don't like the bye situation, but at least it's better than with anything we've had before.
Great. I just wanted your take on that, because that was one thing that had been bothering me. But we're going to go ahead and look at the Blitz the Ball Coach segment, where we get to ask Coach some hard-hitting questions. Coach, as a special teams guy, you know we had to break out the special teams question, and you know what it has to regard. This new NFL kickoff rule, what are your thoughts and feelings on it? I think most people have an idea where you're going to go with this.
Well, let me say this. I think it's really goofy. I mean, it's really – and I know what they're trying to do. It's all about injuries. It's all about eliminating injuries in terms of that. And the preseason, I really didn't tell the story, because some of these special team coaches will be very creative and innovative with this new rule. Basically what it is, the kicker kicks off from the 35-yard line, but his kicking team is lined up on the 40. The opposing receiving team is on the 30. And the whole concept is the kicker must get the ball in what they call the landing zone from the 20 to the goal line. If the ball hits that landing zone, you must return it. Now, if the ball does go in the end zone, the ball then comes out. The ball comes out to the 20-yard line. But if the ball does not go in the landing zone and goes completely out of the end zone, it goes to the 30. So teams are looking at that. Wait a minute. I don't want to kick the ball out of the end zone like I used to make a regular touchback, because they get the ball in the 30-yard line. I now have a 70-yard field. But so – you're going to see creative ways for the kickers will be very important, to drop the ball in that landing zone. Now, if the kicker kicks the ball out of bounds, the ball goes to the 40-yard line. So, I mean, that's going to really impact the game. But if you looked at it closely, you're going to have nine guys up there, and no one can move until that ball is kicked. And if you ever noticed, the Saints had a game the other day, the guy barely flinched, and they call him for illegal procedure. You know what's funny about this? Who's the head coach? Bill Belichick. I asked Bill Belichick at the Manning camp this summer. I said, "Coach, what do you think about the new kickoff rule?" He said, "Well, it's going to be hard to administer. In other words, hard for the officials to call it." And I agree with that. You can see a lot of penalties on this thing, but there will be nine guys up there blocking. What they're trying to do, and the whole motivation, is to try to get the kickoff return back in the NFL, which is one of the most exciting plays. And it could be. But we have not seen how it's really going to work yet until the season unfolds this Sunday, or actually Thursday night. And that's when coaches will really be innovative with it. What you saw was just a generic version of what coaches are going to do with this rule.
It'll be interesting to see. I don't know how it will play out or how long it'll take to trickle down to the college game. But we know, Coach, that's usually how these things work. They start the NFL level. And, I mean, now we have the two – it can't be the two-minute warning, Coach. We have the two-minute timeout now in college. So I think it's only a matter of time where we do see some version of it trickle into college. Hopefully it's a perfected version or as close as it can be by the time it doesn't make its way down the ranks.
Next week, we're going to talk about the hip drop tackle. That's another controversy.
All right. So let's go ahead and break out our newest segment, At the Water Cooler, where we're going to talk about any topic that's really important and fresh in the minds of people. Coach, right now you have a topic that not a lot of people are maybe either aware of or are talking about, or it's kind of hidden in the shadows, the NCAA antitrust lawsuit. First of all, what does this entail? How could it impact college sports, and what are your thoughts on it?
If this sounds confusing, it's because it is. What has happened now, a judge still has to rule on this. It's not really official yet. And what the lawsuit says that 22%, or actually 22% of a school's athletic revenue must be given back to the players. And so this is going to be really something. It actually could go back 10 years. So a kid that played in 2000, would that be 10 years from ago? They actually 2014, they can actually get compensation. Now, they don't know if that compensation, this is beyond an NIL money now. They don't know if that compensation will go strictly to football and basketball. Right now, it looks like it is. But all of a sudden, you factor in Title IX, you factor in the scholarship. And by the way, there's talk that the scholarships in football will actually be upgraded to 105 scholarships. And you say, wait a minute, 105 in baseball, you know, you're going to have 35 guys on the travel team that will be part of this deal. And basketball will be upgraded. But the 105 scholarship going back to that in football, a coach is going to have to make the decision. Do I put 105 guys on scholarship? That's expensive. That's 20 more than they have right now, the 85. So can a school like Tulane, for instance, afford 20 more scholarship? The other flip side of it is that a coach can decide, well, I'm only going to give maybe 95 scholarships, and the other 10 will be walk-ons. Because it's going to eliminate the walk-on program completely because they will be counted in that number. So what does it do to Title IX? What does it do for the other sports? I don't want to call them minor sports because you get yourself in trouble. What does it do for the other sports? So this decision is way up in the air. And again, this is beyond NIL money. This is money they're taking some of the revenue. Like, for instance, if a team makes $100 million, the athletic department makes $100 million, 22% or something like that will go to them. Now, they're hoping that the NCAA or someone comes up with a parameter, says, okay, this is your formula that you have to follow. So football is going to get this, basketball is going to get this, baseball, girls athletics is going to get this. But every athlete from the last 10 years will actually be compensated based on this particular ruling. And now it's very, very confusing. It's a lot up in the air about this thing, about exactly how it's going to be orchestrated and who's going to benefit from it. But it's going to cost the university a lot of money. It could really cause a turmoil with people dropping sports. And you could see a lot of people go back to Division III like they have no scholarships and attached to athletic program whatsoever. So this is going to be something that we all have to keep an eye on. It's pretty interesting. And I didn't explain it completely thoroughly like it should be because there's so much gray with it. And again, remember, a judge has to rule on it. But it looks like that whoever the judge is, and they didn't say exactly who it's going to be, it looks like this is going to be passed. And because there's a lot of pushback from the athletes of the past saying, hey, we're making this money. We should deserve some of that revenue from it, which I don't agree with it. I want you to know that I don't agree with it at all. In terms of that, I don't know what happened to the scholarship athlete. The books and tuition you play, and they get room and board. They get free meals. They get a chance to work out. They get coaching. They train for professional sports and things of that nature. But now everybody's going to be a free agent. And I remember Nick Saban said on game day the other day, he said, you know, when he decided to step down as head coach, there were agents all over the place wanting to talk to his players. Because they knew that he was trying to convince them to go to other places or become their agent. So everything could be free agency. And it's going to be a professional football on a college level.
Thanks, Coach. And to put this in real-world terms, in terms of minor sports, as being from South Louisiana, being a big baseball fan, in particular college baseball fan, LSU has one of the very few profitable baseball programs in the country, right? That's factually true. baseball has only permitted across the board 11.7 scholarships. For those who don't know, that number is about to jump to 34. And while that might not impact LSU, a school that has one of the handful of schools that makes money, look at UNO right now, right? UNO is currently in this deficit where they're having to funnel money out of athletics to keep their university afloat. So to Coach's point, what does that do to programs like UNO or smaller even FBS schools?
Well, let me ask you this. You have Tulane University, the books, tuition, and everything included over there, and meals, you're talking about $85,000 a year. So how can you come up with more scholarships for football at $85,000 a year? I mean, and then how worse, as you just mentioned, baseball. How can you afford to bring in more baseball players like that? Because right now they can't. It's hard for them to get baseball players because they have to come out of pocket with a lot of money. There's not enough money to go around. So this is going to go round and round, but that's our world. That's our world. It's all generated by money. And I really fear for athletics in the future, especially college athletics.
Yeah, Coach, and it's a scary situation, but it's something to keep an eye on. It's because this is going on right now, right? And this is going to be progressing over the next few weeks, maybe months. We'll keep you updated on that timeline. But let's go ahead to our favorite segment, my least favorite segment, because I constantly lose. But let's go ahead and take a look at the lock of the week. Coach, who do you like in this week's matchups?
I like the University of Texas against Michigan. That's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough ball game. And the Ewers kid, I really liked him in the Manning camp. I mean, it's more to Texas than him. Of course, Sarkisian, I think, is a great offensive guy, great offensive mind. Texas has the people. Will he be physical against Michigan? That's the big story.
I also have Texas. That's -6.5 in the Big House on the road. We'll see what this team is made of. Again, does having the SEC logo on your chest magically make your team Superman? We'll see. It didn't help for LSU this past weekend, but I love this early matchup between these two teams that were smart enough to schedule the game week two. Maybe LSU can take a page out of their book, but fascinating game. So that'll do it for our first show, Coach. Let's go ahead and make sure you know where to follow us. You can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok. On Facebook, it's at the Let's Be Frank Video Podcast. On X, Instagram, and TikTok, it's at the LBF Podcast. So that'll do it for episode number one. Coach, this is our junior season, right? This is season three. But I'm very excited to be back here with you again. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
The final thoughts, Coach Robert Valdez from the St. Aug Purple Knights will be our guest speaker next week. And guys, please say your prayers and go to service on Sunday. And look, if you have any other thoughts, please contact us. And I don't know much about this QR stuff, Coach, but I think we're supposed to have a QR so you can kind of log in that way too.
Yes, and we'll get onto that soon. So that'll do it for us. So for our producer, Justin Thomas, for head coach Frank Monica, I am Jason Dewey, and remember, let's lay ball on tour, let the good times roll.